What is true dominion? Is it the dominion over others, or is it the dominion over our thoughts? If you are listening to this, you probably already know the answer. In this podcast, Stella and I explore how discernment is a requirement of true dominion and how we can learn and practice it. Plus, we have some really interesting stories about people whose skill of awareness is nothing short of astonishing. I am Becca Lewis, and this is the 14th in the Reality Shift series within the bigger context of the Shift the Story podcast. Stay with us as we explore the questions and answers to who and what has power over us, and what is true and what isn't. It is all good, and it is definitely a shift of the story. This talk flows directly from the last one we did about right identity.
Mm-hmm.
So to start the talk, maybe we should talk about what the correct premise is, or why we have that correct premise. Before you do anything, you have to start from the correct premise.
Have to. If you don't, you've got an error in the conclusion, period.
So no matter what, matter if we're talking about what we're talking about today or anything.
Anything.
If you start with the wrong perception or premise, you'll get the wrong answer.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And since we're always talking about perception, if you start with a premise of a perception that isn't where you want to go, you will go there anyway. But
right.
If you start with the correct premise and correct perception, then that's what you'll live, appear to live as your life.
Yes, and the distortion disappears more and more as you stay in the correct premise.
Yeah, I like that. The distortion disappears, because
yes.
Nothing changes about what we call Big R reality.
Yeah.
In fact, just a kind of aside, we call it Big R reality as opposed to Small R reality. So it's kind of one of our things that we talk about in the shift. But Big R reality, what we're talking about is the truth, the true reality that exists with or without us being aware of it, because it always is.
Yeah, like it's like perfect. The perfect perception or the perfect premise has a perfect reflection. It has to. So if we look at just the surface of a lake or a pond, if it's completely calm and still, you have that perfect reflection off of it. The human sense of things has more of the wind is always affecting the pond, so it's distorted. There's waves, and you never get a clear reflection when you're in that state of mind.
So, the wrong premise.
Wrong premise. Wrong premise are the waves and the distortion of the surface.
So, we're always starting with the premise that all there is the divine, infinite one.
Yes.
Whether we understand it or not, doesn't matter. We're starting with that premise.
Well, that's the thing. The human sense cannot understand it. So, that's why it has to be abandoned, has to be eliminated from thought, that we're humans attempting to do something and have a perfect understanding.
So what's interesting is actually when we're talking about correct premise, it's actually the correct premise talking about itself.
Yes.
Well.
Correct premise understanding itself, because understanding is a quality of God, and only the infinite can understand itself.
So the more we get out of the way.
The more the distorted sense gets out of the way, yes.
The more big our reality, or what is actually the correct premise, becomes
yes, the more
visible.
The more of that we experience.
Now, you had that really cool quote from Einstein about that.
Yes, Einstein said, without the belief in the inner harmony of the world, there could be no science.
Oh, that's interesting. The inner harmony.
The inner harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And Hargreaves made a comment about that. He said, it is the move from an awareness of some inner harmony to a scientific understanding of the principle of harmony that is pointed to by religious history. At some point, however, belief has to yield to understanding, which in turn is a quality evolved from principle and not a goal for human search. So belief stays in the realm of opinion. Truth or understanding is experience. Truth cannot be satisfactorily believed, only understood.
Which brings it to the big R reality, because what's understanding is the divine understanding itself.
Mm-hmm.
So life gets easier and easier when we let go of our point of view about who we are, which kind of brings us to dominion and discernment.
Yes, and it's an interesting thing because we can't let go of something if we don't have that perfect idea to replace it. I mean, that's why we have to start with the perfect idea, the perfect principle in its ideas one, that concept, you know, the I am concept. It has to begin with that.
Well, I like that because so many times people say, don't do that anymore, you know, about anything. Don't do that. Don't be that. But they don't give you anything to go to.
Yeah, it's like being in that square boxed room, and they're on one side of the room, they're saying, well, this isn't working so good. Let's go to the other side of the room. But you're still in the room. You have to leave the room altogether.
So when we're talking about the room, we're talking about the premise that there is a small R reality, that
very
there's
small.
A duality and there's separation. So it really helps to listen to the right identity call that we did before to know where we're going here. But you can understand that just by itself. The small room, very tiny cell that we live in, is the identity that we're human. And the big R reality is the identity that all there is the divine, and we are the expression of that divine.
Right.
So that's what we're about today. We're talking about how that relates to discernment and dominion.
Yes. And you know, it's interesting about discernment and dominion. It, as we start with that premise, because you can't define those words based on human sense. If you define those words based on human sense of things, you've still got a distortion. So again, you start with the wrong, incorrect premise, a limited premise, limited perception of things. As you start with the correct premise, it reveals understanding, reveals truth, reveals that perfection of what is going on.
So we always have to be careful because all words have the false premise and the true premise. So we always have to be careful about, since we have to use words at this point, we have to be very careful about what words we say.
Exactly. And you've probably got definitions of discernment.
I don't have to in that definition.
You
do you?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Of course you do.
Now, to discern, now this is just discern as a verb, to see or notice something unclear. That's one. Two is understanding something, to understand something that is not immediately obvious.
Ah, I love that.
And three is distinguish, to be able to tell the difference between two or more things. Now, if we use physical senses on all those things, we're still going to have some confusion, you know, understandably have some confusion about, well, okay, but you're still trying to use physical senses to tell you. And then if we go to, remember I was talking about reveal something?
Yes.
So if we go to that ultimate understanding of reveal, which is, you know, to me is like the revelation, the book of Revelations.
Right.
Now, in that first vision, it's interesting that one individual wrote about that first vision is spiritual sense discerns the truth of being. Now, the key word there is spiritual sense, or the key words. Because in each one, as they go through the seven parts of the first vision, each one says spiritual sense discerns. So it's the spiritual sense that discerns. It doesn't say human sense discerns. It cannot discern.
It can't discern.
It can only discern things in the physical. This over here is good and that over there is bad. But that's physical stuff. That's physical happenings out there. Only spiritual sense can discern the truth of being. So unless we understand what spiritual sense is, it's not going to quite fly. You know, it's not going to get off the ground.
Well, we won't have an experience of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is always what we're working on in the shift is not just the blah, blah, blah words, but the actual experience of what those words mean and actually experiencing them in our life. So it's not, oh, it'll be okay someday. It's okay now because this is truth.
Okay now, okay, always okay. It's
always
been okay, always will be.
And it's not the same as the book that said, I'm okay, you're okay, because it came from the point of view you were human. And I have a really cool quote from Mark Twain that I thought was funny, since we're still talking about human, but he said, I believe I have no prejudices, whatever. All I need to know is that a man is a member of the human race. That's bad enough for me. So, in a sense, that's what we're saying. If we agree that we're a member of the human race, we carry with it all the beliefs that humanity has. And what we're saying is that we aren't human. We are actually spiritual sense.
Yes, we don't identify as human sense, as human.
So we have to be discerning about how we identify ourselves and what we see. And the reason we always talk about it is because you're always talking about awareness.
Yes.
And that's where what discernment is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, discernment. And then the noun discernment is, I have five different things under the noun discernment. One is the cognitive condition of someone who understands. Two is delicate discrimination, especially of aesthetic values. Three is perception of that which is obscure. Mm-hmm. Very important, that one.
Yeah.
Four, the mental ability to understand and discriminate between relations. And five, the trait of judging wisely and objectively.
Wow.
Discernment.
What a wonderful word, both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we don't really learn discernment.
No, not, well, definitely not. I mean, we learn it in that human sense of things. We discern between, on that external, the good and the bad, and, you know, things like that to a degree. But we're still out there in that external. And again, our tradition, our training cultures have been adamant about teaching us that the external world is the real world, to the point where it's a given. And to go someplace else, to go within, to places that are, you know, unfamiliar, even to talk about dreams, is, you know, set some people off. They're like, oh no, you don't want to go there.
Well, and when we talk about dreams, we're always talking about dreams as leading to the awareness of spiritual sense.
Absolutely, because dreams are
not
more
within the room.
It's as Mrs. Eddy said, and many people have said about dreams, they're actually more real. There's more substance to a dream than there is to what we call real living, real life.
Right.
Realness, reality. And yet that isn't true. That's just more of dreaming, the dreamer dreaming. It's, you know, it's all a dream that way.
And one of the things when we were talking about awareness, I know we went to get to dominion, but how do you get to the idea of what's false dominion and true dominion, which is what we're going to talk about, unless you have some awareness of discernment. So when you're discernment, which is awareness. So you talk a lot about, you were telling me the story about John Young and Jim Corbin and the tracking, spirit tracking, and how that worked. And since you brought up dreams, why don't we talk about that?
Oh, right. Well, Jim Corbett first. He was a hunter in India, around the Himalaya Mountains in some region out there. But he grew up in a native society and culture where he was taught, you know, a lot about the jungle, and he developed jungle sensitiveness. And what he said, he couldn't quite explain it, as just so many different things would happen, but his awareness was so peaked. He would go into the jungle and he would know when a tiger would be in a large area of where he was at. He would just be able to sense it. He knew it. He could see it. And there was no physical, visible way you could say, well, how did you do that? He just knew it.
Right.
And he couldn't explain it. And he would tell stories. He told a story once about he was with a group of people, and they had been out, and I don't know what they'd been doing, but they'd been out doing something, and he walked back to his hut where he was staying. And he was going to meet this group later that night, and so he's going to have to walk this road to this area where these other people were and meet with them. And it was a hard road. It was dry on this road. There was nothing, no mud or anything like that. And so he very easily could walk the road in the dark because he knew the territory very well. He didn't need flashlights or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a particular man-eating tiger that they were trying to hunt and find. And they hadn't been able, as far as I know, hadn't been able to find this tiger. But they knew it was in the area, and he knew about this tiger. He walked to the meeting, had the meeting with the people and walked back. And when he got to his hut and inside where the light was on, he looked at his pants and they were all muddy, clear up past the upper calf. His pant legs were all muddy. And he's going, now where did that come from? Because he walked the road, he knew it was all dry, there was no mud on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really got him questioning, you know, what happened last night that I'm not aware of? And remember, this man had developed awareness to such an extent
mm-hmm.
that he was so aware of everything. And so what he did, he went back the next day and traced all his tracks.
Right.
Because he was a very, very good tracker.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was able to see where, when he went, he actually bypassed a place. There was a culvert that ran under the road. And he got to this place and he went down and underneath and through the culvert and came up the other side. And then went back on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he no recollection of that at all, that he had done that. And then he got to looking around more and tracking, and he found where a tiger, and it was the tiger he'd been looking for, had went and was following these men up the road when they had left his cabin originally, and then stopped and came back because it sensed, the tiger obviously sensed he was coming.
Right.
And so it laid an ambush for him.
Wow.
And he could tell by the tracks it was in a pouncing, the posture was a pouncing posture.
Right.
Ready for him to walk by and was going to pounce on him. Now, he didn't, you know, he was aware of this on a place that, you know, and this is where I go, this is what I mean by mind always takes care of itself.
Right.
He just completely bypassed any danger. But his physical, mental state was not aware of that. But something much deeper was. And he was able to connect with that and be that and avoid all the danger altogether.
Do you think that he was able to connect and be with that a lot because he trained himself in that awareness? Whether he was training himself in the awareness of the divine mind, saying, oh, I'm training myself in that, but he was training himself in discernment and awareness of what's present.
Right, yes.
So you said mind always takes care of itself, and it does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why would it not?
Yes.
Because why would love not take care of itself?
Absolutely.
And since we are what itself is, it's always taking care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But we get very much involved in, well, I have to take care of myself.
Yeah, the physical thing, the separation of, I'm not part of, you know, I'm not part of, and I have to be part of,
right.
And I am a part from.
Yes. So, in a sense, we're leading into dominion and false dominion,
mm-hmm.
false dominion and true dominion. And just before we start talking about that, because I want to come back to what you were talking about, but the quote that started, I think, that brings many people into the idea of false dominion is the one that's in Genesis. It's Genesis 2:26, and it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them." So, from the wrong premise, we get false dominion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it says, man has dominion.
Right.
And, of course, I don't think anybody isn't aware of the dangers of false dominion within the world, but false dominion within ourselves is what we're going to talk about a little bit today. But the true dominion is actually stated in this quote, if you begin from the correct premise.
Okay.
So, God said, let us make man in our image. And to me, that answers the whole question. God didn't say, let's make myself in man's image. God said, let's make man in our own image. So you have to go back to, what is God then? What image of God is God talking about? Is God talking about a human type God that knows good and evil, that is arbitrary about decisions, that we can pray to and say, can you help me, but never mind that other person, that can take care of themselves, or I'm in danger now, so help me now, though you don't never help me any other time. Is it that God that we're talking about? Or is it the God that we always talk about, the God that we can only really understand in the place that we are now through the qualities of what we see and call God? So if we talk, if we go back to what the qualities of God, so just take the simple ones that almost everybody would agree with, that the quality of God would be love and intelligence and joy and beauty. I think everybody would say, yes, God's got to be those qualities.
Right.
So if we say God is those qualities, and we can actually understand that because we can look out, even though there isn't an out, but we can look with what appears out, and we can actually feel what those qualities mean. We can, we sometimes we can explain them, which is when we know we're really in the God sense of them. We can feel what those qualities of joy and love and intelligence mean. So if that's the God that's saying that, so we'll just say, what if we just change it and say, and love said, let us make man in our image. So we'd have to be saying that love made love.
Right.
So if you read this correctly, then you would do that, the same thing with everything he talks about, the writer talks about. The dominion you'd have is over the thoughts of what fish is. What is the sea? Oh, what is the fowl? What is air? What is cattle? That's dominion over the idea and thoughts of what they are, which are also qualities of the divine.
Yep.
So dominion is stated quite clearly in this passage that the dominion is dominion over thought.
Yes.
Not over objects.
Yes.
Which just makes everything so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Especially within our own self. That the dominion, we're talking about dominion and just a simple thing. I don't know anybody who isn't always working on something they don't like about themselves. Which is crazy because it's a false premise to start with. But let's just say that that's where we are. We say, I don't like this part about myself. So they try to have dominion over something to change that.
Yes.
Which will never work. That's false dominion because you're standing in the small R room. So the predator, which we've talked about in another talk, so we have to say, go back and listen to that talk, identifying the predator.
Right.
So the predator, which is whatever you want to call it, evil, the lie, the illusion, whatever you want to call it, but we call it a predator because it doesn't wait passively. It's like the tiger waiting to pounce.
Yep,
exactly. It's on a pounce mode all the time. It's just not going, it's not sitting back drinking a beer in the house watching TV. It's a pounce mode.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the predator is an illusion, but it is a predator. And the dominion that we have to have is the dominion over that predatory idea, the false premise, which is the predator. So what I've noticed and you've noticed in the coaching and the talking that we've done is how often the predator idea takes the idea of qualities and turns it against us.
Mm-hmm.
And gets dominion over us again by using the beginning of the understanding of what God is, but turns it against us. So an example would be, if you've discovered that you have the quality of lightness. Let's just make that one, which is a quality of God. So it is a quality that everybody has. Lightness, the quality of light. They are light itself.
Yes,
but. As a human, you might be saying, but I'm not light, and I'm just going to use weight as an example because that's always such a big deal. So I don't weigh what I want to weigh. I'm not light enough.
Right.
But since I am the quality of God, which is lightness, the fact that I'm not light on the physical sense, I must be doing something wrong.
Right.
Now we're in false dominion and not discernment of what's true.
Mm-hmm.
So the dominion then does not become, I've got to get dominion over my weight problem.
Right.
It's dominion over the thought that I have anything to do with weight.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're not light itself. So we're never trying to make something happen. We're trying to see what is already present.
Yes.
Which is that you're light.
Mm-hmm. And the pure thought of, well, again, starting with the right premise of thought, and it's pure. It's always been pure, and it it can become tarnished and distorted as we move outside of that into an external idea of it, which you just described about the white thing.
Right.
And that mind that separated itself from what is the oneness of things, that mind always distorts things and will always have a problem, because the problem is the very belief it's separate. So from that viewpoint, that starting point, you always have a problem. And then we always go outside to attempt to fix that problem. So the mind that created the problem, we're using that same mind to attempt to fix the problem. And always that inherently causes other problems.
Because it's the mind itself that is the problem.
Exactly.
The way we always say, the perception itself is the problem. And as soon as we shift our perception, there is no problem.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that, we've had that. Again, this goes to what we've described before as the tunnel vision, the beta sense of things. It's keeping in that very narrow, busy outside activity. And when we alter that viewpoint or take that viewpoint and start from a place where we see all, which we describe as 360 vision, mm-hmm. where you're seeing everything in a huge field of vision, now you're not limiting things, and it really cuts down the chatter. So if you remember, we start thinking about things.
Right.
But we're thinking of things from a premise of there's a problem, or I've got to fix, or something's wrong here, or it's right even. Oh, this is right. I did something right. But it invariably there was something wrong before. So there's always that going on. There's that constant chatter. The vision actually takes you out of that chatter.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what a tracker, somebody that's like Jim Corbett, had that ability, or developed that ability. We're actually born with that ability. I mean, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's that as we, really scrunch things up into that tunnel vision and we're trained more and more in that idea of keep
away
looking outside.
From awareness.
Yes, then we develop that, the mind's always busy because we're looking at one thing and so preoccupied with it, we don't see anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Where when you stop that chatter, you find that calmness. Now this takes us to that place that we actually never left, which is that calm, perfect surface of the lake, so to speak. That idea of now you're going to have the perfect reflection. Now you can hear anything that needs to be heard. You'll see things that you couldn't see before, because now you have perfect reflection instead of a distorted, wavy perfection or perception of things. So another story is there was a man that grew up in Kenya,
mm-hmm.
and he was an Englishman, but he grew up in Kenya and was taught by the native people in that country. And so he learned to track and be aware, as the awareness I'm describing. And he got to a place where he was, his help was enlisted to catch this man who was wanted for murder. And they had him once, but he either got away or something happened, but he was free or loose. And so they had to recapture him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were out in the bush attempting to capture him. And this man was tracking him. And as he was going along following these tracks, they had two or three other people with him, with weapons, to help subdue this person. And as he was tracking him, he was getting a feeling about the tracks, noticing something wasn't quite right, and he was listening, so he's doing this large 3D awareness of things. And he heard the monkeys making sounds, and he knew those sounds from the awareness of it gave away the trouble. It gave away there's somebody behind us coming up on us. So what this person had did, he had made tracks into the woods and then backtracked and hid and waited for these people to go past, and now they were coming after them. They were going to ambush them.
Mm.
Because of that awareness, they hid and they walked right into their ambush, and they recaptured them. But that's that awareness I'm referring to, and in the human sense of things, we're always warned of that, because the monkey's always giving things away. The birds are always giving things away about that place out there.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes you aware of that going on is that calmness, that internal, close down that chatter,
mm-hmm.
find that calm place and be there. And then you're forewarned, and the more you do that, the more you're coming from that premise of perfection. And then you have awareness of experiences of, I didn't even know there was trouble because
right.
I completely bypassed it.
That is a point I really am glad you said, because we do talk about the predator pouncing. It could, then the predator idea could say, I could get you anytime, and that produces fear, and that's not at all where we're wanting to go. What we're saying is discernment and awareness is a quality to be developing at all times, but love always takes care of itself.
Yeah.
So there isn't anything to fear, but we do have we do need to stay in awareness and discernment so that we don't think we're experiencing it. Because that's, again, what we're talking about. We want the experience of love and abundance and divinity. And we want that experience. We don't want the false perception of the predator. We don't want to experience that. I don't know anybody really wants to experience that. So we're always safe. The truth of who we are has never been attacked and never can be. But as we become more aware and more discerning, then we have that experience like Jim Corbett did, which is we don't even know there was a problem and never even came into our world.
Yes, which prompted the question for himself was, wow, how many other times has this?
Yes.
And of course.
Many, yeah. Many times.
And the more, as you come from the correct premise, it's inconceivable to a human mind what that kind of life is like. We cannot conceive of it.
The human.
Yes, and that's why, again, in the first vision of Revelation, spiritual sense discerns
yes.
the truth of being and what is life. A human sense can't possibly do it.
So again, what's talking now, spiritual understanding is talking about itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the more all of us stay out of who we think our personality is, the more we'll actually experience that.
Yes. And again, we have to remember that we have been trained to think the personality is the real thing, the real deal, and develop that personality and get out there and do this and do that. And as we don't do, most of us don't do that, of course, that creates quite a conflict that we're always battling with. You know, it just perpetuates itself in its own problems. And
get out and do this perpetuates mm-hmm. that problem.
Oh yeah, that idea of I'm not doing enough, or there I did this, and you know now I can whatever. It just as we're out there with that external idea of things, the more we're out there, and then we're trained to do that.
And that's always something we want to talk about, because we are all trained to do, but we're trained to do within that human room.
Mm-hmm.
But we're never saying that we don't take action, but the action we take is different.
Oh, completely different. I mean, again, if you look at the action the man from Kenya took, I mean, he's listening, and he took action. Well, he avoided catastrophe for himself and the other people that were with him. Look at Jim Corbett. His awareness, he saw this, even though he wasn't physically aware of it, there was something so aware that it took him completely out of that place of danger. But he was active. It wasn't, I'm going to stay in the little hut. I don't think I'm going to go anywhere because it's safer here. Well, does that make any sense?
It makes no sense. That's he had something he needed to do.
Yeah, mind is always active.
Actually,
it's always perfect action.
It's always
Hello?
Perfect action. So there's
yeah.
always doing, but it's
yeah.
not doing to make something happen. It's doing as yeah. the expression of the divine.
Now,
there's
the human,
doing.
Yeah, the human sense is always the wannabe. I want to be the perfect spiritual blah, blah, blah. Never going to happen. And again, I refer to the false faith society and that story that Mad Bear tells about those people. They got to that place where they could create and do things as God. And that's when the big metaphorical 2x4 hit them across the head. I mean, in the most extreme way, because it doesn't work that way. That's one is one. Doesn't go outside of itself to try to prove to itself that it can be one like it.
So if you're having that co-creation idea, you're in the false faith society, which I know is not a popular statement to make, that we're not creators and we're not co-creators.
Mm-hmm.
So to be clear, when we're talking about that, we're saying we're not co-creating anything. We're not God the creator. There's only one cause and creator. What appears is if we're creating our world is a perception. Mm-hmm. It's our perception blinding us to what's true. But we didn't create anything, which means there is no reason when you shift, why not shifting your perception wouldn't immediately shift your experience. There isn't a creation that you made that has to be done, undone, or fixed. There, we didn't do anything. You can't change what's true.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that we often get is, well, if there's an absolute, yes, okay, I can see that point of view, that there's an absolute divine one that takes care of itself at all times, and this goes along with action, but I still have to feed myself and dress myself and get up and go to work in the morning. So all the actions that we normally take, well, if I really understood that divine love takes care of itself, then I don't really need to do that anymore. And there's a... I know. Well, so there's a couple points in there. First, it's a discernment issue. What premise did you start with in the first place? And there's a dominion over your thought issue. But it's as silly as saying... I was talking about this with you. I was saying it's as silly as saying, well, Del, let's go to Hawaii. So in the middle of a snowstorm, we decide to travel to Hawaii, which would be fun. But we don't wear any warm clothes at all because we're going to Hawaii. So we don't take care of ourselves here in Ohio, where it would be in the middle of a snowstorm. We make ourselves as if we were living in Hawaii, mm-hmm. which would mean on the way to the airport, we'd probably freeze to death.
Mm-hmm.
So we take care of ourselves in the situation that we're in. In Ohio, we wear warm clothes. When we get to Hawaii, we take them off. So it's as silly as saying, well, why do I still have to eat if the divine takes care of itself? And then you can switch that to an awareness, well, what are you eating? Then you would take each moment and say, well, what is this? This piece of food is the quality of substance, which is God. So you're really not eating human stuff. You're eating, you're participating in the qualities of God in a different way.
Right.
So that's that same... action, there's always action, but where's your discernment and dominion about what you're doing?
Yeah.
So it's a constant, wait a minute, am I eating to be as a human, or am I eating because this is the divine taking care of itself as the form of peas or chicken,
sure.
or whatever it would be?
Yes.
So that takes away all that, but, you know, I have to still wear clothes, all that blah blah. If you go to everything is present as God,
yes.
There is only God present. So discerning it back to the qualities of what it is takes away all that worry about when will I get there. Well, we already are there,
right?
And it's just our perception that keeps us from experiencing it, not from being in it, but experiencing it.
Yes, and again, It's a little bit at a time. It's here a little, there a little. It just moment by moment, and it's starting with that understanding, that correct premise. It is why we always talk about the 360 vision. Do it often, because that's what gets you in that calm state of mind. The other stuff starts to dissolve. Human sense will say, "How come it's not happening right now? I did it." That's human sense, and that's discernment of. Discern, know when human sense is telling you something that, well, it's human sense saying that. Spiritual sense knows the truth of being.
Right.
Only spiritual sense. So that is calm. You'll know exactly what to do in any given moment. But if you listen to human sense, which, oh, you screwed up here, you listen, that's human sense speaking.
Right.
It's always going to
say something
you into
like
its distorted world.
Or it can say it to, you know, we think, oh, it's always going to say something negative, but it could say something wonderful. It could say, oh, you're so wonderful. Everybody else doesn't really understand who you are, and you've got something special no one else has, which is just as dangerous. Oh, probably more so, because then it puts you in that false dominion, that you get dominion over other people, which is really... a very scary false dominion. But either way, if it's saying we are personality good, better or worse than other people, it's the false
right.
sense, that saying. It's not, it's so discerning the difference. But when you were talking earlier, what made me think about is New Age, in quotes, has the attraction to, I can attract to me or be attracted to premise. And how is that a false premise?
Well, again, it's on the outside. It's external. And it says, if I behave this way, then I'll bring that to me. If I think this way, I'll attract that to me. Now, if we look at the correct, we looked at the perfect principle, principle is idea, the oneness of things, the perfection, the purity of thought. It's got everything right there, right now. Mm-hmm. Now, human sense can't possibly understand that everything is right there, right now. So, as you talk about qualities, when you look at everything around you, the quality of things, you'll see that is absolutely true. Everything is here, present, right now. And when, because qualities take you to that place of, you know, you turn the things into thoughts. And the thoughts, the only true thing about the thoughts are the perfection of the thought, the purity of it. And there it is.
And there it is.
Yeah.
Not attracting it to you.
Not attracting a thing to me, a you know, substance
this
to me.
This amount of money, this man, this house, not attracting that to
yourself. A way to discern that is, you know, you can ask the question, what is mind saying? Is mind saying, I want to attract this to me? It is it. Always has been.
So that kind of thinking is false dominion. It's saying I'm going to have dominion over those things because I can get them and bring them to me or me to them, either way. So that's a false dominion point of view.
Yeah. Well, counterfeit dominion,
it's attractive, though, because it sounds so easy. If I sit here and do this thing, if I envision it and I see money swirling around me and I, you know, all those different kinds of the secret ways of attracting things to you, it sounds like, well, I could just sit here on my couch and do it and all of that happens. And that is such a dangerous resemblance of what's true and so agreed upon. But it's that discernment that says, wait a minute. The only cause and effect is God. The only attraction, the only force of attraction is God. What is this? I'm going to sit on my couch and envision money coming to me.
Right.
That can't possibly be true dominion. True dominion would be that dominion over your thinking, what is abundance, the qualities of abundance that are present now, and what movement or action do I do to express that?
Yes.
Which often looks like I'm sharing yourself. One of the things that we're always talking about is as you do this work, you become more and more aware of the unique qualities of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Not the unique qualities of who your personality is, which is false dimension, but the unique qualities of who you are as the expression of the divine. And then what comes out of that is the sharing of it, because you don't live in a little tiny room anymore. You live in the awareness of the infinite. So you take action to share that unique qualities of what you are rather than holding it all within. And what we always are noticing that the small mind, the false dominion wants us to not do that. So the very thing that is easy for us to do because that's who we are is the very thing most of us will resist at first.
Right.
Or do the reverse version of it, in a dominion version of it. Still maybe doing the same thing, but under the I'm in dominion about this rather than dominion over the qualities of my thinking.
Right.
My dominion over my thinking. Awareness, discernment of what I'm thinking, and dominion over the choice of what I'm thinking.
Right.
Of my, and or we call it perception more often than thinking. Because thinking, it is thinking. We are a thought universe, but there's an element of creation in the thinking word.
Mm-hmm.
We've attached creation to thinking. That's so if we're thinking about it, then we've created it. And so we just keep going to perception because there isn't any creation in perception other than it's there and we can shift it.
Yeah.
So that makes it easier.
Yeah. It reminds me of, talking about personality, I kind of see it as that, back to that analogy of the clear, perfect surface of a lake or a pond where, you know, there's absolutely no wind disturbance or anything disturbing the surface. It's a perfect reflection. The personality is kind of like the waves. And so each wave, to make a wave, it has to have a high point and a low point. Otherwise, it's not a wave. So each personality is like that. You may have a high point, but with that high point is always a low point. And mm-hmm. you're always going to end up at the low point also. If you're at the high point now, you'll be at the low point later. And there's also, there's really high waves and there's low waves. So you'll see some really high peaked waves, but it's a much further place to fall. So, but that's personality. It's either up or down, and it's always up or down.
Yes.
That's what it does.
Well, that's interesting, because I was thinking about that the other day, that there is that belief system that in order to experience good, you have to experience bad, which is that up or down in the room. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking how distorted that is, because the truth is that you can experience multiple, the qualities of God are infinite, and you can experience multiple ones of those which help you have more awareness of the other. So just as a really simple example, you could experience a wonderfully warm day where the birds are singing and the flowers are blooming, the sky is blue. I'm always talking about blooming. The sky is blooming. Mm-hmm. So you can experience that. You can fully experience the qualities of that day. And then fully experience the qualities of the next day, which may be crisp and snowy and quiet, and everything's muted down. You can fully experience the qualities of that without one of them being bad and one of them being good. But the contrast between the two made it very apparent how wonderful each quality was. And that wasn't experiencing, I've got to experience bad to experience good. It was experiencing fully the qualities of one thing.
Right.
And then you fully experience the qualities of the other, but not switching back and forth. That's that in that now, that awareness of each thing is a wonderful thing. So you don't, there is no need for duality, which is back and forth duality. You don't have to have tragedy to appreciate good.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have bad to know what good is. There is no need for that. That's an agreed perception.
Absolutely.
And in our discernment of what's the right premise, why would we agree to that mm-hmm. ever again? Ever. Why would we say, well, I have to experience this in order to experience that? We've all done that. So we've all been in what might be considered bad situations or things that we would have chosen more awareness not to have been there. And we can say, what I learned from that, but I did not need to go through it to get that awareness.
Absolutely.
So we don't have to impose that on our children.
We don't.
And say they have to go through that to get that awareness.
Yeah, and a very vital point about that is, you know, to remember that and know that you can't keep reverting to that mm-hmm. line of thinking
mm-hmm.
because you're keeping yourself in that place. So it's very good awareness to understand you don't have to go through bad experiences, you know, to learn something, to get something. But it's also very vital to know you must stop repeating
right.
the same human sense things or
right.
staying in that place and expecting results that would be spiritual. It's not really going to happen that way.
So although we sometimes do feel like, well, I've been here before, you haven't been there before if you've been increasing your awareness, because you're in a completely yeah. different awareness state. So you could shift that perception within a fraction of a second rather than 10 years. There is no time that is taking place other than our greed perception, that once we're in a perception, it takes time to get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the perception goes so beyond human limited perception that you start to have the discernment right away of, oh, I see how whenever I did this it would lead to that
mm-hmm.
kind of idea.
Yeah.
And so you have more and more discernment of that and more awareness, so you can go, oh, I'm not going there. You just start to feel the edge of it.
Yeah.
The feathery edge of something that you've done before.
Uh-huh.
And you know, that's not
Wait.
The place to go. It's
yeah.
it's that calm place where you go, ah. You have discernment in the calm place.
And you have dominion.
You have spiritual discernment in the calm place.
And you have dominion to say, I choose, I don't go
yes.
there. That isn't, I have dominion over my thoughts. I have dominion over my perception.
Mm-hmm.
Not people, places, and things, but over perception and thoughts. And
yes.
I can have dominion to go back to what the qualities are.
Yes, and then the unseen becomes visible, but still not to humans. And I've got a great story about
that.
Oh,
good. Are you going to tell that story?
There's a story of this fellow. I was listening to this fellow talk about spirit tracking. And he came from a lineage of linear thinking. I mean, he was really into linear thinking. I mean, just like anybody that's mm-hmm. been trained that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was difficult for him to go to places of, you know, do the circular vision and do the that calm, silent, and it was difficult. He mm-hmm. he couldn't understand why that, you know, that meant anything, and he didn't like talking about dreams or things of that nature. So it was very difficult for him, but he kept practicing the 360 vision, always practicing. And he was even at a tracker school where he was training people to track. And he was told to help the students to find deer tracks in a cornfield. Mm-hmm. And how they did it, they had to put sticks in each track. They had to get a bundle of sticks and stick a stick in each track they found. And then they could stand at a distance and see how the deer moved through the cornfield and into the forest.
Yeah.
And then they went into the forest to try to attempt to do the same thing. He was totally frustrated. He spent hours on hands and knees trying to find tracks in the forest and couldn't find them. And he knew his mentor, the person who had taught him, used to jog through the forest following tracks. And he just thought, wow, his awareness is so amazing. He can follow those tracks. I can't even see him, but he's obviously seeing them. And he's running, you know, the jog. So he was always baffled by that. So he got frustrated and asked his mentor, you know, what? I don't know what to do. And he said, we're trying to find these tracks, and we can't find them. And his mentor looked at him and says, well, you don't think I was following the tracks, do you? And he goes, bam. He said, well, what else are you doing? I said, well, he said he got this really funny look on his face. He said, well, spirit tracking. And he said, well, that's nice. What's spirit tracking? I have no idea what you're talking about. So he said, just do the 360 vision. Just do that wide vision. Do a lot of it, and you will know what it is. I can't explain it to you. So he said he did that for years, and then he's found himself in Maryland in this old field that used to have alfalfa on it. It was just stubble. It was hard-baked, really hard surface. He couldn't walk on it in bare feet because, you know, you just get stabbed all the time with these little things.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no tracks to be seen anywhere. It was just this huge field. And so, but he's doing his experience of the circular vision, and all of a sudden he sees these silvery lines crisscrossing through the field, and he goes, and yet when he went out of the circular vision mm-hmm. into and tried to look at those lines, mm-hmm. they disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he went back into circular vision, oh, there they are. So as soon as he tried to look directly at them, they disappeared. Very important. This is a huge key
right.
to what we're referring to here.
Right.
So he had a person with him, and they were walking together, and he said, you see those silvery lines? And the person said, what are you talking about? What's silver lines? I don't see anything. Oh, okay. So he just stayed in that vision and just continued to follow them, and he said, oh. Because he got, all of a sudden, he just saw this flash of three deer butts. There they were, just as plain as day. And he said, there are three deer. Let's follow them. And the first one said, what are you talking about? Oh, that's right. You can't see. Well, let's go find these deer.
Right.
And there's nothing in sight.
There's a
little forest way off in the distance. But he sees these lines.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as he stays in that vision, he sees the lines. So he follows the lines.
Uh-huh.
And they go into this woods. It's a little woods, not about 20 acres. But there's a low-lying area. There's a lot of brush and stuff. And he runs in. They walk into that area, and all of a sudden, three deer jump up and take off.
Oh.
And this person looked at him like, Mike, what? Who are you?
How did you know?
But see, it was, he could only have that experience in that place. And there was no chatter there. It was calm. Mm-hmm. He could see everything mm-hmm. there. But human sense goes, what are you talking about?
Right.
Period.
Well, that is really what human sense says, is what
you're
talking about.
That doesn't make any sense. I don't see it. I'm using my physical eyes. I don't see anything, so you must be wrong.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about it anymore.
So in that state, there's no point of talking about it.
You can't. It's throwing pearls before, you know, that
swine.
Like that.
Although swine aren't bad, but
yeah.
I mean, like the analogy.
The idea of it.
But So really what we're talking about is that you it's a radical decision. It's a root. Radical means root. It's a root decision to come from the correct premise. Mm-hmm. And that shifts everything, your experience of everything. Although people on the outside may not understand why your life is shifting that way, mm-hmm. or why you're experiencing things differently, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that we each individually make a decision to have discernment and true dominion.
Yeah, and the individual who's doing it might not understand and might won't understand
yeah.
it. And that's when it really takes that effort to stay there, because it's so tempting to go, I don't get this. This is freaking me out.
Yeah,
because
well, it's
that's
freaking
what this,
out the human.
That's what this individual did. It freaked him out.
Yeah,
that he was having this experience, and yet he stuck with it.
Well, I know we're at the end of our talk, but I just feel like I want to say one more thing. It's one of the thing about dominion. Mrs. Eddy said, the planets have no power over man than over his maker, since God governs the universe, but man, reflecting God's power, has dominion over all the earth and its hosts. And the reason I just want to touch on that briefly is because so many of us put ourselves in the little boxes, whether they think it's the planets that have determined our box, or our heredity, or our upbringing, or whatever it would be. And that can't be true. When dominion is within God, dominion is God, not us. And the planets are a reflection and a quality, as are the birds, the bees, the sky, the flowers, the qualities of God, not the dominion. So when we hear those things that say, this is who you are, this is really what I want to get to, then when you hear, this is who you are, unless it's describing you as the qualities of God, it's a false description of who you are. It's a human identity. And we all have the right and the choice and the necessity of making the right choice.
Right.
Of being in the right premise,
yes,
and the right,
yes,
discernment,
absolutely.
And right,
yes.
Dominion. So, do you have any last thoughts before we say goodbye for this talk?
360 circular vision, that's a good thought.
It's a good thought. It's the good thought choice. About that is some people may not know what you're talking about, so they're going to have to listen to some of the old talks.
Yeah, they'll have to.
And we do have some papers about it, so they can always come and look at our websites and find more about what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's that place of spiritual discernment right there, is that place.
So whatever that is right now, go mm-hmm. there.
Go there.
To spiritual discernment. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just like on this call, most of the time I'm in that.
Right.
I'm doing that. And then you start seeing the things to talk about, the things to
right.
bring up, the stories to tell. It just, there it is.
So it's not human personality doing this talk.
Exactly.
Which makes it a lovely thing to be doing.
Very.
So thank you everybody for joining us.
Yes.
And
thank
thanks
you
for
all.
Being here.
Yes.
Until the next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for practicing, living, and sharing true dominion. You can find the notes for this podcast at theshift.com/podcast. And this is episode 94. And thank you for sharing this podcast with anyone else you think would like to hear about shifting their story. So till the next time, we will continue to shift the story together.